Mr. Lewin in Reel 23. So as we were saying, Mr. Lewin, at this stage when the Germans started to retreat and the company fixed bayonets, you realised that you turned the counterattack.
Oh, we thought we'd done it then, because we could see the movement. I mean, Frank Duffy couldn't see the movement. He couldn't see it because he was too. He wasn't that far away, but he was down in the dip, but he couldn't see but we could see them, and we knew from that, from what they were doing, that they weren't going to come and, you know, that someone would have enough and they were turning around and making their way back where they came from.
Now, just talking in general terms about when you're in the middle of a battle like this, what is your awareness of what's going on around you? I mean, how far can you see in terms of what other sections of the platoons are doing?
Well, what you do is it isn't so much what you can see as what you can hear. If you think that you're not getting perhaps enough firepower, something like that, it's more, you're guided more by the sound than what you are. You can't afford to look around too much, because you really want to keep your eyes, you know, like in front of you, you know, look ahead of you, but it's more by the sound of things. It's really, you're really guided by the sound more than you are from what you can see, unless there's anything untoward happening, you know, really. I mean, if somebody gets badly hit or something like that, that creates a different problem. But in terms of you can't afford to sort of look around too much, because you just get used to doing it.
And at this stage, were you able to distinguish between German weapons and the British weapons?
Well, yeah, by the sound. Again, it's by the sound. I mean, if you like an ordinary, not going to say so much about a rifle, but with the machine guns and the Snipers and the machine guns, you could tell because it was a different sound.
What was different between?
Well, I mean, the brain gun is sort of a steady chugging. It's not a fast sound. You know what I mean? The Tommy gun is faster, but it's more distinct. It's heavier, and you can tell the difference straight away, even by that sound. Whereas with them, and the ammunition that they were using, for both the type of guns, it was lighter, and so therefore it was quicker, much quicker.
But other veterans have talked about the Germans using a lot of tracer ammunition more than
they did. They did. They used to do that. I don't know why. Every so often you'd see a round of tracer. You'd hear a burst of fire, and then you would see a round or two of tracer. But you see, in actual fact, it wasn't good practice, because that is something that you look for.
That gave their position away.
That's exactly. Yeah.
So, how long do you think this battle lasted?
You mean at
on
this counterattack? Or, I should say, an hour to maybe 2 hours by the time, because I remember that when Frank Duffy knew more or less what had happened, and that some of them had turned and were going back, he was then able to give Joe Kellett a different range than the mortars, and Nick and Joe chased them back anyway, you see. And but although he couldn't see them, he got his directions more or less from, well, I would say it was probably from, he was getting most of his directions in a roundabout sort of way from the platoon commander of 17 platoon, because they were better placed than anybody to see what was happening on the reverse slope.
And would that be via a runner or radio telephone, or what would it be? How would they?
Well, what was happening? What would happen? There was such a thing. It may sound a bit corny, but nevertheless, it was very. It was a job that was very important. And used to have somebody. It was all part of the. You would say that it was part of the war establishment, you know. When they make all the platoons and that up, you would get a position, what they call a platoon runner. Well, the platoon runner in D Company for a long, long time was I'll think of his name in a minute. But he would, Duffy would make use of him. What Duffy would do, he would send him up, just up the hill, to probably 17 platoons positions, and that got it. Not got it. Anyway, he would send him up the hill to 17 platoons, and he would abuse 17 platoon to that position, and he'd get to know, and then he would go back to Duffy straight away and tell him. So it was fairly quick. I mean, you were talking about, what, 50 yards, I suppose, something like that. Perhaps not 50 yards. The runner would have to come down the hill. Run up the hill, and then run down the hill. So, what bit there was, you know, back to Duffy. Right? And what Duffy did was he told Joe Pellet to increase his range and follow him down. And that's what exactly what he did. But mind you, we did take about, what do you think, we took about 15 or 20 prisoners there. We rather wanted to take some prisoners, because it would have been useful for the intelligence people to find out who they were, and they weren't any of the old Italians, you know. These were the pucker ones, these.
So they were Germans.
Yeah, they're very much so. And we must have been about 15 or 20 prisoners.
Could you describe so, that? How you took the prisoners, or how they reacted, or how did they surrender? How did that work?
Well, they mainly they got to the top of the hill. They were quite close, and they'd realised that the bayonets were out. I think that was one thing, and I'd also realised that they weren't going to get very much farther. So what we did is that we weren't too concerned about the ones who were going back down. We knew we'd see them again, but I mean, we weren't too concerned about them. We were more concerned with the ones that were nearest to us. And so that was how the prisoners were taken. I sort of got round them and touched them down.
What cover did they have? you know, immediately before they surrendered, where were they? What were they hiding behind? What were they taking?
Oh, well, they didn't have any cover, really.
So they were exposed between the mortar fire and the cover.
Yeah, yeah.
And were these the first Germans that you'd seen close up?
Oh, no. No, we saw... No, we've seen before that. No, we've seen before that. We saw someone down on the beach when we were off the landing craft.
These were POWs that had already been?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. They weren't by any means the first ones that we've seen, but they're...
How do they strike you, these particular ones, then, as soldiers?
They were scruffy. Well, when I say scruffy, they... we weren't exactly well-dressed. I don't think anybody was well-dressed, but what I mean is that... You know, they were a bit untidy. I think they were.
What about their attitude?
Oh, well, their attitude. There's nothing wrong with their attitude.
The morale, did they?
Oh, that was good. There's no doubt about that. they thought they were on a good thing, I think.
What do you mean? That they were pleased to be taken prisoner?
Well, in some cases, yeah. But the only one who didn't really want to go, we managed to take an officer. And I'm not saying that we set out to do that, because we didn't. It just so happened that one of them was an officer. And he was, people talk about the Germans being arrogant. Well, he was a typical example. And so what we did with them, we fetched them down. We took them down to Duffy. We took them down to Frank Duffy. And he had a look at them, and I can remember he walked past this officer, and this officer was like that.
Hands on the top of his head.
And but he was shouting all the time, and like, you know, arrogant and that. And Duffy saw his watch, and he reached up and unstrapped his watch and took it. I can remember him doing that. And of course that made him shout even more. But what he was really shouting about was the fact that he had been taken prisoner.
Who was he shouting at?
Well, nobody in particular.
Just at his own anger.
He just wanted to let off steam.
Can you remember how specifically he was taken prisoner? What he was doing at the, you know, where he was? How this German officer was taken prisoner? How you managed to take him prisoner?
Well, what we were left with when a lot of them turned around and went back and retreated, they sort of left some at the top, and they were, as you might say, in no man's land. And so what we had to do was to get round them and make sure that they, first of all, that they weren't going to do any more damage, and secondly, to get them down. The main thing was to get them down to Frank Duffy.
What had you been told in your training, and also, you know, through your experience in North Africa and so on, about the business of taking prisoners? Because obviously, to take a prisoner, you were putting yourself at risk, in the sense in which you could put yourself at risk. And, you know, I mean, what kind of things went through your mind when you were thinking about taking a prisoner? Because
I think the main thing that went through your mind was the fact that you were probably wondering what sort of a bloke it was. You know, whoever you were taking, what sort of a chap he was, what sort of reaction you get. That was the main thing. Of course, I mean, obviously the first thing to do was to disarm them. But I mean, having done that, that would be the next thing you had to find out, how they were going to react to it. in some cases they would come, and that was it. Especially later on, you know, when things were going badly for them.
What would you do if you had somebody that wouldn't surrender and they were in like a hopeless situation?
Well, quite honestly, if you're asking me what I personally would do, I never really had the experience. I had that sort of experience, but I think what I would, if I had have had, I think I would probably, if he was being a bit stroppy about things, you would have to be a bit stroppy towards him. I would think that would be the best way. I don't think I ever had that sort of experience myself. That's not to say that I was never concerned with taking prisoners, because I was, but I mean, in the main, it wasn't always a personal thing, and it was just not person to person. There was probably other people around, and you wouldn't get much resistance because of that. He would probably give in anyway, because he knew he wouldn't get any further. On the other hand, as I say, you especially with the Italians, I mean, they were ready to give in any time, really. But I mean, as we're going to Germans, I mean, I would think that you had to drop. I know that. I'm talking about that particular German officer. Well, although he was doing all, he wasn't really shouting at anybody in particular. He was just giving vent to his feelings, I think.
So he was possibly more annoyed with himself than anything
else.
Well,
I should think so, yeah. And nobody took any notice of him, and really. But anyway.
Did any of the Germans speak English then at this point? Were you talking to any of these people?
That they sometimes a question was asked, sometimes you would ask, and if there was more than one, you may ask. I think the question was asked on this occasion. It seemed to me that that officer was the one who was more likely to have understood what we were saying than the others.
What was the question? What was the question that was being asked?
Well, I mean, if they could, obviously Duffy at some stage he asked the question about speaking English or understanding English, and he never got any reply really from any of the others, but he did get a reply from the officer.
What did he say?
Which obviously meant, well, I don't know what he said really. I don't know what he said, but. What I mean is, he did understand the question.
Were you kind of issued with, you know, standard German phrases, you know,
no.
Handy Park, that kind of
no.
business?
No.
So when you called on the Germans to surrender, how would you do that?
Well,
would it just be a matter of gestures and sign language?
Gestures and sign language, yeah.
But obviously, you were putting yourself in danger.
Oh yeah.
You were exposing yourself to them.
Oh yeah.
At this point.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, we knew we didn't have anything to worry. We knew we didn't have anything to worry about with this particular.
So nothing went wrong at this point. None of.
With these prisoners, we knew we didn't have any danger there because of any arms that they had been taken from them. So they were standing there with just the clothes that they were wearing.
We talked earlier about the use of captured German weapons, and you mentioned that in passing. I mean, obviously, after this battle, there'll have been a lot of abandoned German equipment. Did you make use of any of?
Not really. You mean to say to pick it up and? You mean to pick it up and?
And use it?
No, not really.
Why not?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
What about their rations and things of that kind?
They didn't carry much. They carried little or nothing, really. No.
What about cigarettes?
Or even that. Even that. I suppose I had some sort of cigarettes, but no, there was nothing like that. We never really. I mean, for instance, after that counterattack, once we knew that we pushed them back and they'd gone, everything was quiet for a bit. Well, I mean, there was plenty of stuff there and about, but nobody bothered to sort of go and pick it up, and nobody did.
What about souvenirs? I mean, other veterans have talked about Lugers and...
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if that officer would probably have had a revolver, but somebody probably had that, I don't know. If they did, they didn't say anything about it, but they certainly didn't have any weapons whatsoever, because Duffy didn't keep them very long. He wanted to get them back down to return their quarters, you see.
And how would that have worked?
Well, he would have had to send somebody down. What he had to do was to take a few, maybe one or two from each platoon, so that there was enough there just to escort them down to battalion headquarters and then come back up again. Because you see, he had to climb all the way down the vineyards to get down there, and that was the way the rations came up too. Because we used to have to do that. We used to have to do that every night to get the compo rations.
You got to carry them up yourself.
Yeah, carry them up. Yeah. They used to be brought to in. They were down at the bottom, and in somewhere around about there. And that was one of the RSM's functions, really. That and ammunition. You know, you go down there, send a party down, and they would bring the Russians up.
Now, you mentioned earlier talking about the standard issue entrenching tool in North Africa, and you didn't think it was very good. And here you were dug in this position.
Yeah.
Were you still using that entrenching
tool? Oh, yeah. We never had anything different than that. That was all we ever had.
So you never had carried picks and shovels?
No.
Some units did.
The only people who had them would have been the Pioneer platoon.
So the rifle companies wouldn't.
No.
Just going back to this battle, as a section leader, you talked earlier about how once the targets were there, you just fired. What kind of orders would you be given to the men in your section, and what kind of orders would you be getting during the
fight? You only need to give one.
Which is one. Right, Mr. Lowndon, we're talking about the action on Hospital Hill and fire orders during the action, and you said that there was only one fire order. We could just continue from there.
Yes, that was, of course, that was Frank Duffy, really. We weren't bunched up, but it was within shouting distance. All two of the platoons were well within shouting distance. Duffy would have been in a lower position. We were on top. We were at the top of the hill. He would have been down in the dip, but he was no more than about 50 yards or so away. It was well within shouting distance. I don't know who. One of the other officers up there was. I'm not sure about. Well, I can think of two, possibly two. And one of them was his name, Ronnie Elliott. Ronnie Elliott. I think he was the second lieutenant. And the other one was Whitehead, who I think was a full lieutenant. And Whitehead, I think, was 17 platoon. Well, I may be wrong about Elliot, but if Elliot was there, he was 18. That was me. That's our platoon. Soft Martin. He was a platoon sergeant. So that was a, it was quite a close. So that's okay. It's only somebody come and sit with the missus. You know.
Now, you were recommended for the military medal for the action over this two-day period, and Major Duffy was also recommended for the military cross. Could you just talk a little bit about that? And
well, I can only think that, so far as I'm concerned, I don't think that that didn't apply to the counter-attack thing on the Hospital Hill. That was before that. My own was before that. Before we got to that position, in fact. We were in a position lower down. We were only barely out of the town, really. And we were... they set up... they got some... machine gun backup from the long range machine guns, you know, field gun, not the artillery, the bigger machine guns.
The Vickers.
Vickers. And we had a small, quite near where we were, we had a Vickers gun there. It was there for a purpose, and
was it manned?
Our main function at that particular position was to protect that machine gun. And I think there were two that they were quite close to each other. Two, I don't know whether to call them detachments or what they call them. Anyway, there were two guns there. What happened was that a German patrol somehow got through, and they knew that these Vickers guns were there, and they made it that was what they were after. Didn't not us, but so much of them, and we were just in front. We were dug in just in front of them. They were sort of raised up a bit. And Frank Duffy knew that what had happened. And he sent for me, gave me a shout, and told me to get out and somehow or other get rid of the patrol, you see. Well, I don't know, fairly early in the morning. It was, and we weren't quite sure, but they gave their position away by their old failing of firing the odd rounds of tracer. That's how we more, he just said, take your section, that's all, because I was a corporal. He said, take your section, see if you can fire them and get rid of them. And so, of course, we had a bit of a job, because as I say, it wasn't easy ground anyway there, and we were a bit exposed, and so we had to try and work things out, and all of a sudden one of the blokes spotted this odd mound of tracer going up, and then I suddenly realised that where they might be, you see, so, and then I also realised that we could have got a lot nearer than what we were, without them knowing it. So we got together and we formed up a little plan between us. And I kept two blokes with me, and then I had the brain gun, and there was a lance corporal with a Tommy gun, and the rest of the section was within, and I took two with me. And they went sort of around that way, and we sort of went straight. And then I started